From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network. Gen continues its Year of Darwin celebration with an interview with Dr. Ian Wood from the University of Leeds in the United Kingdom about the discovery of a protein that plays a crucial role in determining how specific traits develop in offspring.
I'm John Sterling, Editor-in-Chief of Gen. Welcome to our seventh podcast that's specifically focused on our continuing celebration of the Year of Darwin. Dr. Ian Wood is a senior lecturer at the Institute of Membrane and Systems Biology based at the University of Leeds Faculty of Biological Sciences. His group is involved in investigating the molecular mechanisms that control gene expression in human disease. Dr. Wood, thanks for joining us. The work we're going to discuss was carried out by your team in collaboration with scientists at the Genome Institute of Singapore. Let's start by addressing one of the first questions posed in your paper. How have most scientific studies tried to shed light on the genomic basis for phenotypic variation?
The most previous studies have looked for differences between sequences within protein-coding regions of genes from different species. So changes of even a single nucleotide in a DNA sequence of a protein-coding region of a gene can result in a change in the amino acid of the protein, and from there, possibly a change in the properties of the protein itself. So now we have genome sequence available for many species. Researchers have been able to look for those differences between species, and they're relatively straightforward to identify and also to predict what specific changes in amino acids actually occur as a result of those.
What's wrong with this approach, and is there a better path to follow?
So there's nothing wrong with this approach per se. However, it's likely to only identify really a small set of the genomic variation that we actually see and is actually responsible for species diversity. So it's been proposed for quite a few number of years now that the most of the variation that we see between different species is not because the proteins expressed by those species are different, but instead it's because the proteins are used or the proteins are expressed in different ways by each of the different species. So as an analogy, imagine a set of houses that are built of bricks. The bricks themselves are likely to be very similar, if not the same, yet by putting these bricks together in very different ways, we can build houses that actually look very different from each other. In this scenario, looking at the changes in protein coding sequences within genes, which has been the approach taken by most researchers to date, is equivalent to actually looking at differences between individual bricks from one house to another. What we've done is to ask how the regulation of expression of these genes varies between species. And this is equivalent to asking what are the differences in the way bricks are put together to build each individual house. We believe this is the better path, as you put it. But it's only recently that the right tools have become available to be able to do this sort of work and start to address the problem from this point. So our studies have concentrated on a gene network controlled by a single protein known as RES. So REST is a type of protein known as a transcription factor that is found in all vertebrate species. And so we actually looked across all vertebrate species to see how the gene network varies between those species.
Would you describe the main finding which you and your team at the University of Leeds and the Genome Institute of Singapore reported about this protein called REST?
To start with, we provide the first report on the extent to which the network of genes regulated by a single transcription factor vary between species. This actually has some very important implications, particularly for a protein like REST, which is involved in several human diseases. And it means that when we look at animal models, we can only expect those animal models to mimic some of the features that we would expect to see in humans. However, our main finding really addressed the process by which genes can actually acquire new regulatory elements over time. So we show that REST binding sites arose throughout the genome, most likely by duplication and insertion of existing DNA sequence, resulting in changing the regulation of certain genes. Over evolutionary time, these new REST binding sites are consolidated by migration of their location closer to the gene they regulate, and changes in the DNA sequence to increase their affinity for the REST protein itself.
What kind of a protein is REST, and can you say a little bit more about what specifically it regulates?
REST is a type of protein known as a transcription factor. It recognizes and binds to specific sequences in genomic DNA and actually regulates the expression of nearby genes. So REST is actually a transcriptional repressor. So this means it has a negative effect on gene expression. So recruitment of REST to a gene actually results in the reduction of the level of RNA that's transcribed from that gene. And that will follow through, so you get actually a reduction in the level of protein of that specific gene being expressed within the cell.
Please talk about how REST accomplishes its regulatory role.
So REST itself doesn't directly control transcription. Rather, it recruits other protein complexes via interactions at its N and its C terminus. So the N-terminal region of REST interacts with a co-repressor called SYN3, and the C-terminal region of REST interacts with a co-repressor called CoREST. So both of these proteins are actually part of much larger protein complexes, and they each contain enzymes which repress transcription. The enzymes do this by altering the post-translational modifications that you find on histone proteins within the chromatin. So the enzymes recruited by REST include enzymes that remove acetyl groups from lysines within histones, other enzymes that remove methyl groups from some of the lysine residues within histones, and other enzymes actually add methyl groups to different lysine residues within the histones. So each of these enzymes actually has a repressive effect on its own. But together, the combination of these enzyme activities actually provides a very robust level of repression once REST is recruited to a specific gene.
Would you provide the main details of the experiment that your team carried out to illustrate the repertoire of genes regulated by REST?
Yeah, most of our work actually involved writing computer programs and doing analysis on computers to identify and extract DNA sequences from the large number of genome databases that are now available. So we're able to do this using our prediction model for REST binding sites that we've built up over the last few years. So we first identified all of the binding sites in the human genome and then extracted the binding sites and their surrounding regions and also the equivalent DNA regions from the genome sequences of 15 other species. We then took all these sequences and aligned all the sequences from the different species to see which REST binding sites were evolutionarily conserved and which were specific to certain species. So we found that some were conserved in all species, others were limited to mammals, and others were limited to primates. So we then performed some functional experiments to test a selection of our predictions to show that they really do or do not bind REST as we predicted. And we also had access to some other published data on functional REST binding sites that was done across the genome in both human and mouse embryonic stem cells. So at the end of all this, then we can be very confident that our predictions really are telling us something about the functional nature of REST binding and regulation.
What's the relationship between REST and intelligence in mammals?
I wish I could give you a definitive answer to that. Many of the genes regulated by REST are expressed in the brain, and a large number of genes that required REST binding sites, specifically in primates, are also expressed within the brain. So this suggests that gene regulation within the brain has a potential for greater complexity in primates when compared to some of the other organisms, such as fish or rodents. So this increased complexity is likely to be important for some of the higher brain functions we associate with humans, such as intelligence and language. So by contributing to this complexity, we think, therefore, that REST has an impact on these functions. Unfortunately, right now, we're not in a position to actually quantify what this contribution by REST actually is. So all we can do is put forward these hypotheses and hope that we or someone else will come along in the future with the means to be able to test these ideas specifically.
In your paper, you note that your group's research on REST has led to the creation of a model where new transcription factor binding sites are constantly generated throughout the genome. Briefly describe this model, and how does this model help increase our understanding of the evolutionary process?
So our observations of different genomes showed that new REST binding sites were created often by duplication and insertion of new DNA during meiosis. During meiosis, the exact sequences that are passed from one organism to that organism's offspring are generated. So when these sites actually arose nearer a gene, then that gene could become regulated by REST in the offspring of that organism. So we actually found that newly created rest binding sites appear some distance from the genes in which they regulate. And in fact, we would expect this from a random event, because only about 2% of the human genome is actually made up of protein-coding genes. We also found out that new binding sites are imperfect, and they bind rest with actually quite low affinity. Again, this is something we would expect, as there are more ways to generate an imperfect rest binding site than a perfect rest binding site. Contrary to that, older rest binding sites are found much closer to the genes they regulate, and they recruit rest with much higher affinity. So this provides us then with a molecular mechanism for one evolutionary process in which regulation of genes can change over time. So new rest binding sites start off with weak affinity for rest, but become strong over evolutionary time, probably due to single nucleotide changes. The sites themselves also become closer to the genes they regulate. The effect of this is that the gene and the binding site is then less likely to be separated by these recombination events that occur in meiosis, and thus more likely to be passed on together into future offspring.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.